He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lowdown. I'm Anthony Irwin, trying this again because StreamYard kind of screwed up last time, but it looks like it's working. So that is a good thing. It's draft day. There's so much going on. Mikal Bridges is a Nick. The Nets are apparently looking to trade the rest of their wings. So will the Lakers get in on that? The Lakers have the 17th pick in today's draft. What is that going to look like? I also just dropped for Lakers Daily an article about D'Angelo Russell's future and the player option that he has and the decision that he has in front of him. A whole bunch of stuff. Please do hit that subscribe button here at youtube.com/@LakersLounge. If you guys are watching live right now, just go right under the video and hit the YouTube subscriber, the subscribe button there. And then, yeah, I know you guys have a ton of questions, so get those questions coming in. And if I have time there at the end of the show, we will talk about that as well. Whew, man, exciting stuff, exhausting, but exciting. All right. So, let's start with, the 17th pick that the Lakers have in today's draft. I'm also, while I'm doing this, going to be, pulling up the article I wrote for Lakers Daily. Again, I am the, Lakers insider for Lakers Daily. And today, like literally minutes before we went live here, I dropped an article about D'Angelo Russell that I will be touching on and kind of building on later in the show. But the Lakers today have the 17th pick, and just kind of generally speaking, and I always say that this is always just based off of the information that I have in front of me right now. But what I'm hearing right now is that the Lakers are actually like going to follow through with the stuff that Rob Pelinka was talking about at JJ Redick's presser. He mentioned how under this new CBA, drafting well and developing players is going to be of the utmost importance. He talked about how it's going to be difficult to move draft capital under this new CBA and have those trades work out for you. He talked about how difficult it is to find the perfect trade. I didn't exactly love that comment when I heard it. But as it stands right now, generally speaking, it sounds like that's how the Lakers are kind of operating. Now, I will say this on all of these fronts. This time of year, stuff changes just like that. Right. It's just a matter of, all right, 5 minutes ago, we had this offer. 10 minutes later, we have this offer. This new offer is more actionable for us, and we will carry out that stuff as necessary. And, from the Lakers standpoint and what I'm hearing about what the Lakers are kind of looking to do here, it is a lot quieter than I would have liked to have heard, to be completely honest. Part of that has to do also with the way that the Lakers are operating now. I'm told that in an effort to really kind of plug leaks, and I mentioned this at the bottom of today's article for Lakers Daily, that, you know, Jeannie and Linda and Kurt and Tim Harris and Rob Pelinka are all kind of, you know, to use JJ Redick's own word there, the central hub. Everything has been more centralized and decisions are going through them. And the hope there is that by keeping a closer tab on that information, less makes its way to the public. So when I am trying to gather information and the information has to basically go through them for it to be legitimate, it makes it more difficult to find some of the stuff. One of the things that I noticed in Dan Wojcicki's piece today, where he talked about what the Lakers could be looking to do on draft day, is a phrase that he used pretty often was other executives or other sources or teams around the league are expecting the Lakers to do X, Y, and Z. And it's because the Lakers internally are keeping things very, very quiet. They already didn't like how leaky things felt with Darvin Ham and specifically, which is with his coaching staff. And the hope going into this offseason was that would kind of quiet down. And then the JJ Redick hiring process was somehow even louder, I thought, than last year's than last year's season in general. And the Lakers are trying to again get things back under control so that they can better control the narrative. And speaking as a former PR person, I understand where that is coming from, but also speaking from a PR perspective, your focus should be a lot more on trying to make sure that the information is actually positive so that when leaks come out, it's the kind of things that you want attached to your name and attached to your brand. That I think is of greater import than whether or not idiots like me get our hands on information. So with all of that kind of out of the way, let's start by talking about the 17th pick and what the Lakers might be looking to do there. So this draft is very difficult to get a grasp of because it's just all over the place. There isn't a consensus first overall pick. And when that's the case, any number of things can happen. On top of that, you have a team like the Atlanta Hawks who are looking to, compete this next season at the top of the draft. And whether or not they decide to trade the first overall pick is going to make, is going to have a ripple effect across the rest of the thing. There are teams in that kind of late tens area who maybe like somebody, or there are teams like right now, there's some buzz that the Spurs are trying to move up to ensure that they can get Stephon Castle. One, I'm hoping that doesn't happen because I know that he's going to develop really well there. And I don't like the idea of having to compete against Stephon Castle and Victor Wembanyama moving forward. But, when you have that much potential movement there within the top five, everything gets thrown out of whack. And so from the Lakers perspective, they're kind of looking at this like, and actually I saw Dan Wojcicki talk today about the possibility of the Lakers moving up in the draft to ensure they get the player that they like. Hilariously, they like a guy named Jacoby Walter, who Lakers draft Twitter doesn't seem all that thrilled about. But I think that the lesson to kind of take from there is that, teams, given how much movement is taking place early on in the draft, there are a lot of teams who see this with more teams being, down on this draft class. The teams that have had success with drafting players later in the draft, i.e. the Lakers are one such team, those teams are trying to kind of get their hands on better picks or on more picks for the chance at sneaking up there and getting somebody that they really like. And the Lakers, they really trust and they, I think, correctly trust their draft group, their scouting department, and the players that I've heard most often linked to the Lakers so far have been Yves Missi. I'm not a draft guy, so if I bungle some of these guys' names, I promise I will learn them once they are Lakers. But Missi is somebody who has been linked to the Lakers. Zach Edey is somebody who I've heard that the Lakers really liked as well. Not positive that he makes it down there to the Lakers at 17. He's like, I saw Draft Express say that Edey is the second best center in this class, behind only Klingon. And normally the second best of any category of player becomes kind of difficult to come by when you're in the teens. So if the Lakers, you know, and they also, I'm told, really like Daron Holmes from Dayton. He is one of those guys that Lakers Twitter has been kind of fanning over this whole, you know, run up to the draft. And correctly, I think Daron Holmes is probably the guy that I'm the most interested in. I think he can play right away alongside Anthony Davis and obviously grow into a role, you know, as the years go on. I love, you know, I like guys in that 6'10-ish frame who can move their feet. He jumps off, you know, gets off of the ground quickly enough. Showed some stuff as a shooter as well. So I, of the players that I like, I think the players that I've heard kind of mentioned for the Lakers, I've liked Holmes the most. The question there is, like, with him, man, the spectrum on if and where the guy might go is really broad. It is really hard to get a hold of. Because there are so many teams kind of wondering, all right, is there a promise, a spot, two or more spots ahead of us? But we would love it if he was to fall to us. So Holmes is in a good spot, and those are kind of the three names there. I've also seen some stuff with Tristan Da Silva, and I talked to Ricky O'Donnell last week about Da Silva. And liked what I heard from him. He seems kind of like one of those safer picks, a tallish wing who can really shoot the ball, shot the ball just under 40% from three this year, I believe at Oregon. You know, when Ricky was describing him, the description sounded a lot like Kuz, and I enjoyed having Kuz as a Laker. So, you know, I think he is somebody to kind of keep an eye on here. But you know, zooming out, if I had to predict it, I would probably say it's more likely that the Lakers use the 17th pick in tonight's draft than it is that they trade it, which means, as I said on yesterday's show and as I wrote today for Lakers Daily, that if you are using the pick tonight on a player and keeping that player, and we know that Rob Pelinka likes to go into a season with at least one first rounder at his disposal, then the Lakers could, you know, just kind of connecting dots there, be looking to move at most one first rounder. And again, when you know, rewind back to the comments made after the Lakers decided to not do anything at the deadline, the promise there was, well, just you wait. This, you know, to quote Hamlin, just you wait. But like, the promise there was that if you know, if we hold on to these picks now, that means we'll have three to work with in the summer. And if you go into tonight with the anticipation of using that pick, and now all of a sudden that promise of using three picks dwindles down to maybe using one, that is a pretty disappointing kind of message there. And the way that it's kind of been described to me so far, again, from this zoomed out perspective, is that the Lakers are hoping that JJ Redick will better utilize the roster than Darvin Ham did last year. And they're hoping that Jared Vanderbilt will be healthier than he was last year. And they're hoping that Gabe Vincent will be healthier than he was last year. And you know, let everything kind of trickle down from there. Rui Hachimura dealt with some injuries and stuff there. And I know it's probably not what Lakers fans want to hear right now. And again, this is all based off of information that I have right now at 2:58 my time. I guess that would be 12:58, you know, back home. And, you know, again, it's just tough to have LeBron James entering his age 40 year. It's tough to have Anthony Davis on the other side of 30 right now, have them both play at all NBA levels last year, have them both make it through that season healthy, And then on the other side of that, their reward for that after being eliminated in short fashion in the first round is, yeah, that roster that we did stuff with last year, yeah, just that's basically going to be it again. And our focus right now is on developing people, probably for after your guys's, you know, last few chances at championships. That's tough, man. Like, I can only relay the information that I have in front of me, and I wish that I had better information that sounded better, at least to me. But as it stands right now, like, I haven't loved what I've heard from what the Lakers are looking to do. Things change quickly, but so far this offseason isn't exactly off to the best start. I want to talk briefly here about the positions of need, and you know, I would even go so far as to say, like, positions to stay away from. I'm good on guards. We're good here. We know that probably eventually later in the draft, the Lakers are probably going to take Bronny James. He's a guard. You already have Jalen Hood-Schifino, who's going to be looking to get minutes as a first-round pick entering his second season. He's also a guard. Though, as I said for Lakers Daily, his name has come up in some trade talks so far. The issue there is that, like, everybody is basically trading for what? We didn't see anything from him last year. So, you know, and then you have D'Angelo Russell, who, you know, kind of no matter what decision he makes, you're looking at either Russell back on an expiring contract in that $18 million range. And if he does opt in, I think the Lakers would jump pretty quickly at the opportunity to try to turn him into a player who fits better than Austin than Russell does with Austin on both ends of the court. And then you have Gabe Vincent, who's going to be coming back next year, who, if he isn't traded, who is going to be looking for minutes, and, you know, is kind of was acquired as basically like a super sub, like a six man guard who could play with either Austin or D'Lo. So he's going to be looking for minutes. I've also been told that the Lakers, at least, you know, at least a good enough number within the Lakers organization are interested in Chris Paul, that, like, I have to keep his mind or his name in mind throughout this entire process. And if Chris Paul is a Laker and you draft a guard and you have all of those guys that we're talking about, and by the way, you're heading into the season, like, I thought JJ Redick's comments about Austin Reeves, and certainly the tweet that Austin's agent, Aaron, sent out, you know, would kind of, it raised an eyebrow on my part to wonder if, oh, okay, so this makes me think that they'll probably consider Austin more of a point guard this year. He'll have the ball in his hands more. And you know, if that is the case, then D'Lo just doesn't really fit into the concept of the team unless he's willing to come off the bench, which... gamble, to say the least. That feels like a bit of a gamble. So positions of need, I would say stay away from guards. We're good on guards. Just move on. Wings, perfect. Bigs, perfect. Bigs who can, especially who can play alongside AD, all the better. I've seen Jonas Valanciunas' name come up as a potential fit there, as a big. I don't think he would start, but if he was basically that kind of muscle that the Lakers lacked last year, that would be an upgrade, I think, over a very clear upgrade over Christian Wood and Jackson Hayes. Jackson Hayes also has a player option to look ahead to right now, and players like him are taking that player option. So if he does take it, I would look for the Lakers to, same with Wood, I think they would probably try to offload those guys one way or another to be able to find an upgrade at the backup big compared to what they had last year. Wings is obviously an interesting one here because you do have two good wings, I would say. Problem is that they are one-way impact players. You have Jared Vanderbilt, who makes his impact on the defensive side of the ball and does the little things and all of that, but we were hoping that he would shoot the ball better last year than he did the first time that we saw him as a Laker. And I thought his shot looked uglier. So probably not going to rely or even hope for offensive improvement from him that would be enough to kind of negate or offensive improvement that would, you know, make him more playable in the postseason. That's a big step forward, and I just don't know if he's equipped to do that. And then the other guy is Rui Hachimura, who, like people have been saying, man, it's crazy that Jared Vanderbilt didn't get mentioned and Rui was. Well, Rui was asked specifically about, like, I don't recall, maybe Pelinka mentioned him as part of like the young core or whatever. But I think for the most part, when Rui was mentioned in that presser, that was more because of the reporter who I believe was from a Japanese publication, you know, asking specifically about Rui. But Rui is kind of the inverse of Vanderbilt. If you combine those two guys, you would have one hell of a player. But unfortunately, that's not really an option under this new CBA. Cloning and scientific kind of experiments and stuff like that, I don't believe that's covered in the new collective bargaining agreement. I don't know how those guys, if you combine them, would you just combine their two salaries under the cap? What would you do with the roster spot? All of that. Like, I just think that takes you into quite literally uncharted territory there. So if you can't combine those two guys, it makes it difficult to basically figure out what you're going to do with the rest of your offseason. It's like, for example, the guy whose name I've heard a couple times that the Lakers have checked in on and continue to have kind of long conversations about internally is Kyle Kuzma, in the hope that maybe they'd be able to get him. Concern there, though, is that if you're trading for Kyle Kuzma, it probably makes more sense to trade Rui Hachimura, because Kuz and Rui make their impact on kind of make more of an impact on the offensive side of the ball, and you'd like to keep Vanderbilt. But I don't know if Washington would be all that interested in trading for Rui Hachimura at more money than when they employed him the first time around. Maybe, you know, I do believe it is a different, you know, leadership group in terms of their front office there. So maybe that helps the case that perhaps Washington would be a little bit more interested in Rui Hachimura. But if not, you know, and you trade basically Jared Vanderbilt for Kyle Kuzma, then you have some overlap in the skill set between Kuz and Rui. I've heard that the Lakers would like to bring in Dorian Finney-Smith. They've checked on him before and will continue to check in on him over the course of the offseason. Now with Brooklyn having what appears to be a fire sale, there's a decent chance that Dorian Finney-Smith is a lot more available than he was at the deadline. And if you bring in Dorian Finney-Smith, okay, then you can, like, if you go into next year with Dorian Finney-Smith and Kuz on the wing instead of Jared Vanderbilt and Rui Hachimura, no complaints here. That would be a clear upgrade. The only kind of concern that you have there is, like, how many picks it would take to get either of those guys. Finney-Smith, I think, would take obviously less. Maybe it's just second round draft capital that is required to go out and get him, depending on who goes out. And then for Kuz, you know, the Wizards were turning down trades of multiple first rounders for Kuz at last year's deadline. And if they're turning down those kinds of trades and the market is still up at that kind of level because of the Knicks trading all of the picks for Mikal Bridges, then it does become kind of difficult there to sneak in there and try to get Kuz for less than it may have cost back at the deadline. The other thing about Kuz is his contract is one of those rare ones that actually de-escalates. It gets less expensive over the course of that run. And so that is a very reasonable deal. It is a deal that is built to be moved. And that probably means, just like with Austin, right? Like when teams call about Austin, it's not just Austin the player, it's Austin's contract, where he is going to be incredibly underpaid for the next 3 years. And for Kuz, I think he was already on a good deal last year. He's going to be on a really, really good deal this year, and it will only continue to get better over that contract's existence. So, yeah, in terms of positions of need, cool on guards, bring in all the wings, upgrade the wings, I guess, ideally, and bring me more bigs. I want the Lakers to be bigger, stronger, faster again next year. Like that, I have missed when the Lakers had that identity, and getting back to it, I think should be kind of their top macro priority. All right, last thing here before I get to your guys' questions is D'Angelo Russell's player option. The way that it has been explained to me, and as I wrote for Lakers Daily, that article is up in the comments somewhere. We have a ton of comments in here. So, you know, what I wrote for Lakers Daily is that the Lakers, because like it is just the most practical approach here, are basically preparing for D'Angelo Russell to opt out, and they would be open to negotiate a new deal with D'Angelo Russell. It wouldn't be one of those cases where Russell opts out and the Lakers would just say, well, good luck. It was nice working with you. That is not the case. The Lakers, I think, would prefer to have an upgrade in the backcourt that makes a little bit more sense next to Austin Reeves. But, you know, the idea of having D'Lo and Austin together, at least at the beginning of the season, is something that they are open to. It also helps that, like, you know, after I wrote that thing and in reading it back, I think I was probably a little too hard on D'Lo. I should have mentioned that he had, you know, the best shooting season in the history of the Lakers organization. And I thought that for the most part, with a couple kind of weird incidents, I thought he was on his best behavior for the Lakers. And you know, my concern is always what he's going to do come the postseason. But, you know, I was probably a little too hard on him in that piece. And if he does choose to return, there are like worse outcomes. Like, it is a far worse outcome if D'Lo walks out the door, signs a deal that the Lakers could have signed, like re-signed him to elsewhere, and the Lakers lose him and that cap slot for nothing. That would be really, really bad for the Lakers. They need that contract to be able to move during the season, and they need his production at the point guard spot. So, but still, the Lakers essentially, as I've been told, are operating as if he is going to opt out, but would not at all be surprised if he opted in. And then if he opted in, they would immediately begin canvassing the league for some kind of a trade out there for D'Lo to bring back a player that allows Austin to be the point guard next year. They want somebody in that KCP mold, right, where he can take the other team's best perimeter player, so long as it isn't Anthony Edwards. He can take the other team's best player on the perimeter defensively. He runs like, you know, he has infinite turbo, and he can space the floor on catch and shoot type of opportunities. And D'Lo doesn't love catch and shoot threes. He has said that he prefers to have the ball in his hands as much as possible. Not a great defensive player. It's a fine backcourt if like you're okay not really being title relevant, but it's not the kind of backcourt that you employ if the goal is to win a championship. I like Austin. I've enjoyed parts of D'Angelo Russell's second stint here, but they need a better defender at the point of attack. And they need that player to be able to operate off of the ball more effectively than D'Angelo Russell is capable of or even willing to do. So, you know, with D'Angelo Russell saying, and by the way, like what he does at that spot either opens or closes a bunch of doors for the Lakers in this upcoming summer. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. We are recording this. I'm talking to you guys right now on June 26th. That decision has to be made by June 29th. And I would imagine it's going to run right up against that deadline, as his camp tries to find him a situation where he can get paid. I've seen people link him to Orlando. I'm a little skeptical about that noise. I've seen him linked to Detroit. Also skeptical about that noise. Because, well, for one, Detroit has Cade Cunningham. They don't want to take reps away from him. Orlando, the whole point that you would be acquiring D'Angelo Russell is to improve your playoff chances. But if you're bringing in somebody who disappears every postseason, and pardon me, I'm looking off to the side because I have my tweet deck right here. And every time my breaking NBA news tab moves, it's going to catch my attention. But yeah, I think for Russell, his like free agent market is super difficult to figure out. His trade market is also very difficult to figure out. And for a lot of players who you can say that about, their agents are basically telling them, hey, like, you're probably better off keeping your hands on that guaranteed money that you have. And then, you know, next year or moving forward, you can re-enter the marketplace when the new TV deal hits and teams are more interested in spending. But right now, with so many teams like hovering around the first and second aprons, it is very difficult for players like D'Lo, who are in their like mid to late 20s, probably done improving, not quite good enough to be like cornerstone type players. That market is very difficult for those guys. I compared it the other night when I did the Coach's Den space, briefly. I compared it to baseball, where in Moneyball, the only players teams are really interested in paying are the superstars, and everybody else is seen as replaceable by way of the draft. And what you wind up having is like good MLB players are hitting the market and finding it really difficult to get money or to get paid, because those teams are like, all right, I could pay Cody Bellinger, you know, whatever his number would be, you know, 20-ish million bucks, or I could just move somebody up and have him hope to be about 80% of what Cody Bellinger is and pay that player like 5% of what it costs to employ Cody Bellinger. And I think that's how a lot of these teams, like, that's essentially what Rob was telling you in that press conference, is that they would rather draft and develop that young talent then pay role players or trade for role players who are going to be more expensive and not offer up enough production to make up for that difference in cost. So, I would say, you know, right. Like Volley makes the point here, right? The Cubs, are paying Bellinger and he's a bench player now. Like, that's kind of the reason I used him as the example was that, paying him hasn't necessarily panned out for him. So, I don't believe I haven't, I'm not going to lie. I've been living under a rock with basically everything else. That isn't family or basketball. Like, that's really it. Like, it's the Jimmy V thing, right? Yeah. I need you to focus on your family, your religion, and the Green Bay Packers. it has been family and getting whatever little sleep that I can, and the Green Bay, the Lakers. that's basically it. So I'm going to go ahead, and I think that's all of the actual talking points that I had coming into this. I'm going to go through here and answer some of your guys' questions here next. Again, the best way to leave them here is in the form of a super comment, or if I see that some of our Lounge VIPs have questions or comments, I'm going to get to those. And then obviously if it's a pertinent topic, I will obviously start with that. All right. So let's see. I'm going to go up. I'm going to scroll up to the top here because why not? And let's see. I'm going to go with, okay, the very, very first comment that we got is, can you update us on the coaching staff? Saw the Stein report that Casey and Vaughn are on his radar. So Casey, last I checked in on him, is a part of or like a consultant to Detroit's front office. And that seems like a pretty sweet deal. Like, you're getting paid good money. There's no pressure. Like, yeah, I'd probably like stick to that. And I had somebody tell me that apparently the Bulls made an offer to him to try to get him on their coaching staff, and he actually elected to stay in Detroit. So Casey, we'll see. Vaughn, I do think that there's a better chance at bringing in Vaughn. I would be pretty happy if they were able to bring in Vaughn. I think he would be a real addition to the staff. He's been around the game a ton in various avenues. So Vaughn, I think, is a name that intrigued me. The issue that the Lakers are running up against, and I'm going to write about this for Lakers Daily, is that original kind of round of names that were thrown out there. James Borrego, Jared Dudley, Terry Stotts, Scott Brooks, Sam Cassell, like those kinds of names. I'm told they are like, maybe you can get Scott Brooks. I think Scott Brooks is still pretty gettable. Terry Stotts, I think, is kind of difficult. There has been, like, the Lakers have tried to hire Terry Stotts in the past, I think, for both Darvin Ham and Frank Vogel's staffs. And in each case, I think he declined. So, and he's coming off of the nightmare that was working for the Milwaukee Bucks. He may just decide to take a break. So we'll see what happens there. Scott Brooks, I do believe that the Lakers could get, and if they are really focused on getting two former head coaches, Scott Brooks and Jacques Vaughn, feel like real possibilities there to start the staff. Down that list, it gets tricky. James Borrego, I thought was going to be coaching the Cleveland Cavaliers, and then I guess at the 11th hour, there's a Freudian slip. But Dan Gilbert got involved and basically told the people that he's paying to make basketball decisions that they have to hire this other guy in Kenny Atkinson because Tom Izzo told him. So Borrego is still available, but the person who is going to be making the hiring decision in Detroit is Trajan Langdon, who worked with James Borrego and was impressed by James Borrego in New Orleans. Still a very good chance that James Borrego is a head coach next year. If he isn't a head coach next year, had somebody say that it seems pretty unlikely that why would the Pelicans let him out of his contract to go take a similar job somewhere else? They like him in New Orleans. They would like to be able to keep him in New Orleans. And so James Borrego feels a little bit less likely than he did say a few days ago. Jared Dudley is another one who the Lakers would love to be able to bring in. And LeBron specifically, I think, would like to be able to bring in. Problem there is Dallas also loves him. And with Sean Sweeney potentially taking a gig, Jared Dudley would move up that coaching rank. And if he knows walking in that the Lakers are prioritizing, you know, former head coaches for the number two and three jobs on their staff, Dudley wouldn't necessarily be getting a promotion and wouldn't necessarily be getting a raise because Dallas pays their assistant coaches better than the Lakers do. That makes it kind of unlikely that Jared Dudley comes over. Sam Cassell, similar situation. Charles Lee is coaching the Charlotte Hornets next year. We already saw Jeff Van Gundy took a gig with the Clippers. So Sam Cassell could move up two seats on that staff, be the number two to Joe Mazzulla next year on a team coming off of winning a championship and a team well-positioned to win a championship again. And again, the Celtics pay their assistant coaches better than the Lakers pay their assistant coaches. It seems unlikely that Sam Cassell is going to be an option for the Lakers there. You could say Rajon Rondo was another list or a name listed initially. And if the Lakers bring in Chris Paul, that could get awkward. I would probably still say that, like, I would hope both of those guys are professional enough to be able to work together. But, you know, and then on top of that, you have the legal situations with Rajon Rondo. So like, we'll see what impact that plays on what the Lakers are doing. Hell, if the Lakers aren't able to get any of those first round of names, probably improves the chances that they're willing to make some kind of compromises on Rondo. So, and again, I've said his name from the get-go as somebody I would like to see hired there, who has previously worked there. Miles Simon, I've heard that there is some kind of mutual interest there as well. Rob talked a whole bunch about development, and this guy coached their G League team very effectively. He did help develop guys like Kuz and guys like Caruso. So I've heard that he was very well liked in that organization. I think there's a possibility there. And then we'll kind of see what else comes out of it. But again, as I said to start the show, I wish I had better information or more positive information to share there. But because of how long it took for the Lakers to figure out who was going to be their head coach, it put them behind the eight ball with some of the assistant coaching candidates that they may have preferred to bring in. And those other coaches' situations have improved during that time, and it makes it now less likely that they're able to get some of the guys that they preferred. All right. Let's go with Revive. This seems like complete deja vu, and I can't put my finger on why. I'll tell you why. I know that was a facetious comment, but the vibe right now feels very similar to the vibe heading into the trade deadline, where you talk to people and everybody else is like, just kind of puts their hands up and is like, I don't know. We're just not hearing much. And again, that changes. That stuff changes, especially this time of year. That changes very, very quickly. But I do like this moment in time feels very similar to the trade deadline where we saw them not do anything. And then you add on top of that, Rob Pelinka going out and saying publicly that they're focusing on drafting and developing youth moving forward. And that makes it somehow worse than it felt at the deadline. Because going into the deadline, the thought was that the Lakers would be looking to improve. So I don't know, man. I don't know. It feels like deja vu because we keep on going. Time is a flat circle, essentially. Let's go. I see a lot of people are mentioning like specific prospects. I see Collier is being mentioned here. De Silva is interesting as well. I mentioned him earlier. Manny doesn't like Edie. He says Edie can kick rocks. He probably kick him really hard. He has big long legs, so we'll see. I'm going to keep on going through here. Now, the purpose of this was to give you guys kind of an outline on how things feel going into the draft. And then later tonight, once the draft is underway, I'll sit right back down here. I might do it on my laptop so that I can be in a more comfortable chair. I'll be right here with you guys to basically, and I'll have people coming and going for the show as possible and as they can. But we'll walk you through the draft and I'll keep you guys updated on the things that I'm hearing while the draft is going on. Let's see. Yeah. A lot of people asking about Cam Johnson. Johnson's tough because he makes a whole bunch of money and it would take two rotation players to go out and get him. And so like, if you bring in Cam Johnson, you're hoping essentially that he is as impactful as those two rotation players, because the Lakers don't have any non-rotation player, money that is going out there, especially expiring money. And, you know, Cam Johnson showed promise for Phoenix. I really liked Cam Johnson coming out of, I believe it was North Carolina. I liked him as a prospect, did some cool things for Phoenix, hasn't been able to stay healthy though, and hasn't maintained the defensive kind of prowess that I was hoping for. Brian Fritz, are you getting the sense that D'Lo will wait until his deadline before making a decision on his option Yeah, I would probably say so, because the information to this point hasn't been what he was hoping to hear, right? You know, it's easy to make a decision if the decision is the one that you were hoping to make heading into it. Remember, at his exit interview, essentially, okay, so Matt Ishbia just says, NBA draft night is the best. This is about Kevin Durant. This is from Ishbia's personal account. NBA draft night is the best. Everyone talking about drama and storylines. Some are right, some are just wrong. My turn. Phoenix loves Kevin Durant, and Kevin Durant loves Phoenix. We are competing for a championship this year because we have the team to do it. Gotta love draft night. Go Suns. Take that, Stephen A. Smith. Also, people lie. Not saying he definitely is there, but it is lying season. But yeah, going back to Brian's question, are you getting the sense that D'Lo will wait until his deadline? I would probably say so, because you know, you hold off on ripping off a Band-Aid as long as you possibly can. And that's what essentially it would do if he opts in for sure. And then if he opts out and has to re-enter negotiations, basically specifically with the Lakers, hoping to get the Russell's camp is hoping to get a multi-year deal that would take him through to free agency when the new TV deal money is available. Man, Bill Cobbs. He's a fun actor. Bill Cobbs just passed away, but no. Are you getting the sense that so with D'Lo, he wants like a 3-year deal that would make him a free agent again with the new TV deal money. And to a certain extent, it makes sense for the Lakers to do that too, because it would keep him cost controlled while everybody figures out the new CBA. I still think, though, that if he is brought back, a big balloon payment makes the most sense. I was told last year that the Lakers, and this has been confirmed since, but I was told last year that the Lakers basically put two offers in front of him. One was a big money deal. It's like a 1-year, I think $30 million offer or something like that. And the other one was an offer for 2 years with a player option on the back end of it. The Lakers wanted him to take the 1-year deal. He wound up taking the 2-year deal, and it put the Lakers in this spot that they currently find themselves in. And my guess would be that the Lakers would put maybe a similar set of offers in front of them, one being one big balloon payment for this upcoming season that would give him a raise. The other one would be a longer term contract at less money than he is currently making right now. But you know, we'll see what his interest in signing that would be. And we'll see what the interest in him would be. That, I think that's part, Brian, of why this is taking so long for D'Lo. Had he and his camp heard about better offers out there for him, he would be a free agent already. That way that team could line up that money and they could start preparing for the decisions that followed offering them that contract. As it is, I don't believe he's gotten that kind of an offer. The things that you hear about D'Lo aren't particularly great around you, you know, when you talk to people around the league and how they feel about him. And yeah, it just makes for a tough spot for D'Lo here moving forward. All right, I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this one here, and get out of here. Oh, no, I'm not. We have a super comment, which means... Fuck Washington! Rye Guy asking, fate of the world on the line, what's the starting lineup? Fate of the world attached to the Lakers starting lineup? That's just, those stakes don't feel commensurate. I would say Austin at point guard. Shoot like a different shooting guard. Vando LeBron and AD next year. That would be my guess. But again, we very well, like, it is actually, you know what, Rye? The likeliest scenario here, sadly enough, I feel like right now, like, you know, we'll see what comes of the draft and what comes of the next couple of days. We're going to be doing a lot of these, right? Because information is going to develop so quickly. But if I had to actually predict it, I think that lineup that the Lakers finished the season with, where it was Austin, D'Lo, Rui, LeBron, and AD, is very, very much on the table. And the second next likely one would probably be that group, but with Vando swapped in there for Rui, so that Rui can be kind of that scoring punch off of the bench. And Vando can make up for what Austin and D'Lo don't bring on defense. And then after that, I would say the next likeliest starting lineup for next year would be Austin at the one, a different two, Rui / Vando, LeBron and AD. That would be my guess there. It's an educated guess, but it's still a guess right now. But yeah, thank you everybody for tuning in. Thank you everybody in advance for subscribing. Please do hit that subscribe button. If you're watching on Twitter right now, head on over to youtube.com/@LakersLounge, where I will be live for the draft tonight. And then we will react after the draft as well. So we have a nice long block here of us all watching the draft together. And then right after the draft, you have the trades that come after the draft. You have free agency right after that. You have player option decisions right on the other side of that. Tomorrow should be really interesting to see what the second round isolated might look like. I do think we'll probably get a flurry of activity as second round picks are being seen as more valuable under this new CBA than before. So I think the second round will probably do the same thing all over again. Whoever wants to come by will sit down and watch as much of the draft with us as they want. And you know what, for Lounge VIPs tonight, maybe I'll make a post and I'll allow some of you guys to come up onto the stage to watch this with us too. We'll try that out. We'll do an old school lounge to continue that going. So until then, and until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your next few hours. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you for the draft.